Okay. All right. So, quick question for the group, and just by show of hands, we're not, you know, raising hands, but which direction do we daven in?
Israel.
So where? Like, if we were going to have a minion right now, there are almost 10 of us here. So, which direction are we facing?
Well, the answer you want is east.
That's one of the possible answers. Why do we say east?
Roughly east.
Maybe that's not the same thing. We'll talk about that.
Isn't it usually just like a little northeast here?
A little northeast. Why do you say a little northeast?
Like not straight east, just a little bit.
Isn't it the, what do you call it, the Great Circle?
Ah, okay. This is not something we're going to get into too deeply, but let's assume for the moment that our goal is to face, you know, Israel or Yerushalayim, which is not an obvious conclusion, but we'll assume that for the moment. How do we face it? So there are generally two possibilities. If you look in the, whenever you look up Zmanim on myzmanim.com, so I think they'll also tell you, based on where you put on Earth, they'll also tell you what angle you have to daven at in order to perfectly get to Yerushalayim.
What do you mean by angle? Facing up or down?
No, not up or down, but like what angle on a map. So imagine, you know, this is a map of the, you know, of the world. So we're here in Chicago, and if you were to follow what we call the Great Circle route, so think of the way that if you fly to Israel from here, so you tend to fly a little bit north before coming back south. With the idea being that that's the shorter route, even if it's less quote-unquote direct. It's not a straight line on our map, but it tends to get there a little bit quicker. So that's one approach people take. The other is the sort of straight line, like without having to turn at any point, approach to Yerushalayim. So you'll notice that if you look for these things, that's not our subject for today. Our real subject is what direction we face when we daven. A lot of people said Mizrach. The fact that we say Mizrach already is kind of interesting because it doesn't actually say Mizrach anywhere. Like, even the sources that we saw that support the idea of facing east don't actually say face east. They say face Israel. Now, for a lot of halachic history, Jews have lived to the west, and so east has meant Israel.
Mizrach isn't there.
But there's no rule that had to say that. We're looking at a compass now. So Mizrach would be something like that. The Aron doesn't seem to be lined up so well.
I used the compass.
Just lay it flat. I think the compass sometimes looks a little different. Yeah, so if that's the Mizrach. Okay, so
this is the Mizrach?
Apparently.
I can't be.
So that's very interesting.
Maybe doing the polar route.
What?
Maybe doing the polar route.
Ah, that's right. That could polar be. Route is 46. So that's northeast.
That's interesting. By the way, I think, I don't know why this is,
45 degrees.
There are a number of shuls here that run into this problem, which is the third thing we'll deal with today. I'll kind of map out our overall trajectory. But there are a number of shuls here that we can think of where the Aron in the front of the shul does not face a direction that is remotely east. We can think of a couple of examples. There's a particularly funny example is Ezra's Israel, which is a shul in West Rogers Park. The second floor of Ezra's Israel has a beautiful aron at the edge of the room, which is facing north.
What about Kint?
And then the kolel that's up there in that room has their own little makeshift wooden box that they put to the east, and they all dive into the east in that kolel.
Isn't Kins north?
Kins is also north. Kins north, I don't know what it is. But
Kins north
is
always,
right?
Kins north is facing, like,
Kins facing north faces the lake. Okay, so that would be right. My guess is that, like, historically, the shul was not so particular about it, and then later on, when someone decided they have to start dealing with this problem, you know, at that point, redesigning the entire shul is a little bit too tricky. I think both Chovaveh and Or Torah, I think, are both facing east also.
Yes.
So, but there are shuls here like that. In YU, this is a funny phenomenon, there are two main Batei Midrash that they use, one of which has the Aron facing, broadly speaking, to the east, it's a little bit southeast, and one which faces, broadly speaking, north, you know, a little north by northeast. We'll see that in a little bit, whether that's the proper thing to do. So let's broadly kind of map out where we're going to go in the 24 minutes we have. We're going to start by looking at the actual sugyas in the Gemara that seem to talk about this, and note some of the major other issues in those Gemaras, how those Gemaras relate to each other, from like that interpretive perspective. Then we're going to try to figure out what it all means, meaning to the extent that this idea of facing east is a significant idea, or facing Israel is meaningful, so what is the meaning of this idea? And the third thing we'll do is tackle some of the practical halachic issues that come up from this, primarily, but not exclusively, this question of how the Arun relates to the direction that we face. Because we're in a room right now where the Arun does not directly face Israel, and we'll see how everyone davens and see whether that would be the way to think about this. So let's start with the Gemara. Really, we can start with the Mishnah. And the Gemara in Brachot lays out, I think you could broadly argue, a pretty simple principle. So the Gemara in Brachot, if you had to summarize in one sentence, what is the main idea in terms of where you face? We'll add details in a second, but what's the simple, like, one-sentence version? You face Yerushalayim, right? Now, I asked for the simple one-sentence version because the Gemara doesn't actually give a simple one-sentence version. If you're outside of Israel, then you got to face Israel. And if you're in Israel, you got to face Yerushalayim. And if you're in Yerushalayim, you face Harabayim. And if you're in Harabayim, you face the Mikdash. And steps and steps and steps and steps and steps. A lot of different steps to get to that point. Why are there so many steps? Why would that... You could have just had a simple one sentence. We succeeded. Why did the Gemara need to give all this detail?
Drive us nuts.
So drive us nuts. That's usually a good answer to why the Gemara is giving us a lot of detail. Okay. So, well, could I tell just all the dispersed people, everybody, just figure out where Yerushalayim is, or figure out where the Kodesh HaKadoshim is, and face that?
No.
Why not?
Because standing in Chicago, you can't really figure out where the Kodesh HaKadoshim is, but you could generally face it.
Okay, so excellent. Right?
So this is Israel, though, you could be a little bit more specific.
There's actually a small few sentences in here pointing out that the resolution, so to speak, is higher as you get closer and closer.
Right. So I love that metaphor. This was on source number 6. It's a Prisha. The Prisha suggests that it's exactly that idea. He gives a more, you would call it an analog mashal, of an archer with a bow and arrow. So you get, you know, when you're right up against the target, so I could point a really small dot and you could hit that dot. When I'm standing 400 feet away, I give you a little bit more leeway and I say that's a good job if you hit anywhere on the target. So the further you get from Israel... Come on, don't tell me that, like, the difference between this and this, like, that is miles when we get to the Middle East. That's hardly going to be effective. That's possible. That's one idea of that section of the Gemara. Okay, what if you can't do that? What if you're not able to face Israel for some reason? Let's say you're riding a donkey or something.
You think about it in your heart.
Okay, so we skipped a step, actually. That's our third, you know, last resort. Our second option is you turn your face. Okay, and that idea of turning your face is going to be very important as well as we get to the sort of practical halacha piece of it. So our first best option is sort of align our whole body. Our second approach is if we're forced to stand in a certain position, at least turn our head. This is relevant when you're on a plane, for example. It's often, you know, you're on the plane, it's turbulence, you're sitting down buckled up, you're not allowed to get up and start walking around the plane. If you're ever allowed to get up and start walking around the plane to daven, which you probably are not, but even if you were, you might not always be able to. So you sit facing forward and you turn your head whatever direction you're meant to turn your head. So depending where you're flying, that seems to be a practical example of being on a chamor, which is not as common these days. And third, worst case scenario is you have your internal kavana. Just to map out something conceptually that Tosfot alludes to a little bit as well, I guess we have these, broadly speaking, two options. It's, you know, you physically orient yourself or you mentally orient yourself. You have your kavana and your lave. So which of those would you argue is primary? Meaning, what's like the default thing that you're meant to do and what's either the extra, the backup? Okay, so we have one argument that really your internal kavana is what matters, your thoughts are what matters. And at most, turning your body is like a way to facilitate kavana within yourself. It's a way to kind of inspire yourself, but really what's happening in your heart is the primary option. Is there a way to say the reverse?
Yeah, it seems to me they give a lot of attention to the physical standing and where you're showing your head in north and south. And
right, so first of all, if that was the main idea, then a lot of detail, a lot of, you know, ink gets spilled on exactly the right angle and the right formulation, so maybe that's a reason to think that the actual, you know, direction is important.
I think it's more important to daven, okay? No. And because if you're worrying, you're off by a little bit, you keep moving, I mean, you lose your concentration.
So. Okay, right, so all of this could be weighed up against this other, like, main, you know, holy grail of learning about davening, which is, what about kavana? And as a rule, kavana is going to be a major trump card. We'll get to that in a moment, but the idea of kavana being this, like, you know, if we're able to get to it, grab onto it and don't let go, whatever it's going to take. And Poskim will generally tell you that. If facing a certain direction, let's say east is also... you're in a hotel room and east overlooks the pool, and you're not going to be able to daven if you face east.
Right.
I think Post Gum will tell you, so don't face east. Or they'll tell you to close the window shades. You know, there are always options. Okay. So you have different issues there. Right, so that could be one reason to say. So another is at the end of our Gemara, one of the psukim we quote to support the idea of facing a certain direction is Talpiot. Right, Maikara, Kimigdal David Savarech Banui Letalpiot, like the Tower of David is your neck, this is Shir Ashirim. But metaphorically, we understand Talpiot to be a reference to Yerushalayim, the tail, the mountain, or the hill that all mouths turn to. There it sounds also like we're really meant to orient ourselves towards this object. It's not necessarily about our concentration, our ideas, but the fact that all Jewish people are turning to a same direction adds something to our davening in the physical sense, even irrespective of our kavana. So you may be able to say both of those kinds of options. That's all the Gemara in Bracha. Now the Gemara in Bracha contradicts the Gemara in Bava Metzia. How many alternatives to facing Israel could we find in that Gemara in Bava Metzia? In that Bava Batra, I'm sorry. There were a lot of different interpretations as to where you might face, where the,
north, south, and west.
Okay, so we had west, right? Because the Shekhinah is in the west, according to some opinions. So maybe you face west. You have north and south. And Rav Yitzchak says, if you want to be rich, you face north. If you want to be wise, you face south. I think Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi then says, well, if you're wise, you'll be rich also. So you could really have your cake and eat it too.
I said just go on the turntable and just let it turn, keep turning. Exactly,
right. Well, then maybe you're moving during davening. You talked last time about standing, so we have to avoid that problem. And we also had Rav Sheshet. Rav Sheshet said, just stand me up wherever. I'm not picky. As long as it's not east. We all think it's east. It can't be east, because that's what the heretics do, the Minim, right? I imagine that in the Gemara it's talking more about pagans, like sun worshippers who actually worship the sun. I think cathedrals, though, interestingly, are also built facing east. I think if you look at like classic cathedrals in Europe, you would see that. I don't know if modern churches are built differently, but so you have this even in modern religion as well. And there are a lot of mentions of that as well. Like Davkin facing east precisely would be a problem, but being around east would be really where you want to hit.
The Arabs face Muslims face east?
Yeah.
Do they?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, so then... But they face Mecca, right? The same way we face Jerusalem, they face Mecca.
Pretty much the
same. Right, so that's interesting. I guess how concerned would we be about facing the same way as Muslims? That would be a question about how we think about Islam in general.
Right.
Well, we have the great ideas there. Look, also, if the Christians face east, it's possible also we give them that idea too. Right? The idea of Mizrach is something that we really kind of canonized and made very essential. Okay, so that's one issue, just thinking through our Gemara and the relationship between the internal Kavana and the physical posture of your body. And you get to the Gemara in Bava Batra, and you see a lot of different alternatives opposed to our Gemara. Tosfot says, that's not a problem. We postulate like the Gemara and Brachot. All these other opinions are opinions that are basically rejected. They didn't have the Breita and Brachot that said very clearly and explicitly what direction you were meant to face. Okay, you could say that. Not so simple. Especially because it's not only a Breita, it's even a Mishnah. It's a Mishnah in Brachot. It was the second source on the sheet that if you're on a donkey, you turn yourself, and if you can, you even get off to face the Kodesh HaKadashim. So the idea that we're going to follow all of these other opinions mentioned by the Amoraim in the Gemara is very difficult. So Joseph says, we paskin like the Gemara and Brachot, and we just face Yerushalayim as much as possible. And most Rishonim agree. Generally speaking, that's how the Halacha is understood. And the Shulchan Aruch paskin is just that bright without any comment. There's a minority view in the Rishonim that sees a little bit differently. We'll get to the Ramah, who articulates that when you get to the Halacha section. And there's one other note to make, which is that Tosfot eliminates one word from our Gemara. Anyone catch that? It was one of the Tosfot we pointed out. Tosfot, in source number 5, we can turn to that for a second right now. So he quotes the line in the Breita, Haya omid b'chos la'aretz, if you're standing outside of Israel, yechavein keneged eretz Yisrael. You, point yourself to Israel. Right, so our Gemara says, you turn your heart to Israel. Tosfot removes the word lev. Don't say, turn your heart. Say, turn your face, because our Gemara is all about how you face your body. It's all about your incline. Now, if you imagined a Rishon who did not remove the word heart, right, we have the word heart in our Gemara, the Rif had it in his Gemara, so then maybe there's a way to have both Brachot and Bava Batra. They're not contradicting, they're complementary. Because Bava Batra is telling you, what direction do you point your body? Do you point it north for riches? Do you point it south for wealth? Do you point it west to face the Shekhinah? And it's all about how you face your body. And the Gemara Brachos is not talking about that. It's talking about a detail in your kavana. The same way you're supposed to have kavana for what the words mean. You're supposed to have kavana for the fact that you're davening to God. Maybe kavana for the fact that you're doing a mitzvah. Whatever kinds of kavana you need. Also give yourself kavana for a connection to the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Feeling like you're standing in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. And then there's no contradiction. And according to that reading, you'd probably say that really the way you face your body is either not so important, because there's an opinion in Bava Batra that says, I don't care where you face your body, just point me wherever. Or maybe you face south because you want to be rich, or you want to be wise, you want to be rich, both. And then you would be able to come to that kind of conclusion. And the Ramah sounds a little bit like that, but that's kind of the minority in terms of the halacha. So broadly, there's kind of a mapping of what issues we see in Bava Batra and in Brachot. In particular, I'll make one other note, which is we have to go back to Bava Batra for one more detail that's going to be relevant to Halacha Lamaisa as well, which is this question of inclining. So Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi in the Gemara says that you're supposed to be south, because if you're wise, inevitably you'll be smart as well. And then in the second line of the second paragraph in source number 3, towards the end of the line, V'harabbi Yeshua ben Levi amar, Shekhinah b'marav. Okay, it's very nice that you want to be wise, but you should face God. Like, the kavod you owe to the Shekhinah is much more important than your own wealth or your own wisdom. How could it be that you face south instead of facing west? And the Gemara there says, Dimitzadid atzdude. You incline yourself a little bit. It's not clear exactly what that means. Some say it means you face south and you turn your face to the west. Some say you face your body west and you turn your face to the south. The Koran here seems to explain that you kind of tilt, you face, you know, south by southwest or even southwest entirely. And there's this idea that you could kind of have your cake and eat it too in this issue. You know, there's Israel and then there's all these other values, facing the Shekhinah, facing south, maybe facing the Aron. And those you could maybe achieve by kind of splitting the difference, you know, being half one way, half the other. And in the world of halacha that comes from this Gemara, we'll have to see that play out, because the idea of inclining is going to be very relevant for solving some of our contemporary dilemmas. Okay, so that's all by way of understanding the sugyas, the details that come out of those. Second question is, how important is this idea, and why is it important? So, you saw a number of passages from the Rambam. What was your impression of how important the idea is? How important is facing Israel?
It sounds like it's fairly important.
It sounds fairly important. What's the evidence that the Rambam thinks this is a central idea? Okay, so that's the part of the explanation for the meaning of its importance. But let's just go through the evidence in the Rambam very quickly to lay out, how do I know the Rambam thinks this is so important? So our first source is the beginning of Hilchot Tefillah. This is source number 7. In the first chapter of Hilchot Tefillah, the Rambam defines the biblical obligation of prayer. And then after a few halachot of telling you the biblical obligation of prayer, he then says, oh, but when we were exiled, and when it became difficult to pray properly in Hebrew, then Ezra and the rabbis established a fixed text of prayer, and fixed rules, and fixed times, and that created prayer as we know it today. But at the end of that first halacha on our sheet, halacha gimel, he says, I'll start from the beginning, if you're able to daven well, you daven lengthily, if he can't speak so well, then he speaks as much as he can. How much do you daven? As much as you want to in a day. You could daven a lot, you could daven a little. On the biblical level, with the mitzvahs only one time a day, you could do whatever you want. And then he throws in what seems to be maybe a less central detail. Everyone would pray facing the mikdash. In the next halacha, he says, oh, and when, you know, exile happened, it became harder to daven properly, that's when we started adding fixed times for prayer, fixed numbers of prayer, fixed texts of prayer. The implication being, and Rav Soloveitchik notes this and others note this, is that facing the Beit HaMikdash is part of the definition of prayer, the biblical obligation of prayer. The fixed text of prayer, that's rabbinic. What you actually say, mostly not important. But where you face when you daven, that's critical. That's what was originally on the Doraita level, as the Rambam presents it. And he doubles down on this in the Sefer HaMitzvot, in source number 8. In the Sefer HaMitzvot, which goes, it's basically his introduction to his Mishnah Torah, he identifies all the mitzvot that he's going to talk about, and he tells you about the mitzvah of prayer. It's Avodah Hashem, serving God. And in particular, involved in serving God is prayer. And in the last line, Va'amru, they said, Avduhu b'torato, serve him in his Torah. Va'avduhu b'mikdasho, serve him in his mikdash. Ratzalomar, meaning, Hikaven elav l'hitpal sham, turn yourself to the mikdash to serve him. In the passage in the Sefer HaMitzvah, where he defines what the mitzvah is, he tells you to face the mikdash. He doesn't tell you to stand. We saw last week that was an important idea. He doesn't tell you to daven a certain number of times a day. He doesn't tell you to say praise or thanksgiving or make requests. But he tells you that you're facing the Beit HaMikdash. Wow. All right, so now it really sounds like this is what it means to daven. What it means to daven is to be oriented in some way towards the Beit HaMikdash. And the third implication, so in Halacha Tetz, the Rambam describes standing in front of the Mikdash, or standing towards the Mikdash, and he gives you all of the details on how to do so. And in particular, you get to the last line, he says, what does a blind person do, or someone who can't orient himself properly? Well, our Gemara told us he has Kavana in his heart. What Kavana does he have in his heart? The Gemara had said, you have Kavana to daven to Aviv Shebashamayim. But the Rambam says, Yechavim Libo Kineged Hashchina. You incline your heart, you focus your heart vis-a-vis the Shekhinah, oriented towards God's presence, which is how in Halacha 10, he defines the definition of Kavana. When I say I davened with Kavana today, what I mean by that is I davened with the understanding and the awareness that I was standing before God. When he describes davening towards the Mikdash, and what a blind person does to accomplish that idea, he says the same thing. With an orientation towards the fact that you're in God's presence. So from the sort of collective evidence you get from the Rambam's presentation in all of these different places is that definitional and essential to the idea of prayer is having an orientation to the Mikdash, and in particular it sounds like, because that's where the Shekhinah is, that's where God's presence is. Right? The Gemara and Baba Batra assumed that wherever the Shekhinah is, that's where you're going to daven. So if the Shekhinah is in the west, you've got to daven there. If the Shekhinah is all over the place, then, okay, anywhere you look, you're going to look at God, so you're fine. But if you know where the Shekhinah is, that's what you've got to focus on. So for the Rambam, this is what prayer is. And there are a few ways to unpack this. We presented sources 11, 12, and 13 that articulate three different divisions. And I think broadly they line up with the three different sets of psukim in the Gemara as well. The Gemara you could break up into three different sections, and I'll map that out very quickly. The first approach you could take is the approach of Rav Rabinovich, who plays up this idea of being before the Shekhinah. What is prayer? Prayer is engaging with God, standing in God's presence, and inclining towards the Mikdash is inclining to the Kodesh HaKadoshim, where God's presence is. The whole point of the Mikdash is Vasuli Mikdash Vishachanti B'tocham. I will dwell there. The Shekhinah, God's presence, is in the Beit HaMikdash. And the Gemara in the very beginning had said that a blind person inclines their heart to God, Shene'emar v'yitpalalu el Hashem. You pray towards God. Hashem, specifically, because that's who's the person who's present, or the being whose presence you are engaging in. That's one perspective. Perspective number two comes out of this passage. I didn't get it translated, I apologize, in source number 12, from the summaries Rabbi Menachem Ganak, who's the CEO of the OU, or of Ori Kosher, rather, has summaries of the Rav Shiurim, and he summarizes the idea as follows. He says it's not about having kavana towards God's presence. It's about the mikdash itself, because in the mikdash is where korbanot are offered. Well, we know that tefillot correspond to korbanot. I'm making an offering to God. So if I was offering an animal, I have to be in the physical space of the mikdash. I'm offering a prayer, so I just direct that at the mikdash. It's kind of going to fly across the ocean, get to the mikdash, and that's where God's going to be able to receive it. That's the korban element that I'm connecting to when I daven towards the Beit HaMikdash. And I think when the Gemara there talks about all the psukim that Shlomo mentioned when building the Beit HaMikdash and inaugurating it, you daven towards the city, you daven towards this place, you daven to the bayit. There's a sense that the physical destination, being in the Kodesh, or the Kodesh HaKadoshim, is really the goal. To the point that if you are standing around the Mikdash, you imagine yourself as though you're standing in it. This is explicitly, you see yourself as though you're in the Beit HaMikdash, because you're offering a korban. That's approach number two. Approach number three also comes from the Rav in a different place. He articulates a different kind of idea. Source number 13. It's not about relating to a korban, but it's about being a place where all tefillot collectively point. That's talpiot, the mound where all mouths are directed to, because my prayer can only be accepted when it connects with the prayers of the rest of Am Yisrael. That's the idea of tefillah b'tzibur. That's the idea of davening at the same time as the tzibur. So if I'm focusing on my connection to the community, well, we all have a sort of central lens. Our tefillah all get focused to one spot, and then they could break through the heavens, so to speak. And then they could go up to Hashem. Because my prayer joined with your prayer and your prayer, and the prayers of those who are in Cape Town and those who are in Moscow, everyone's coming from different directions, but we all focus on the same spot, and that focuses and concentrates our prayers into a communal prayer. And that is what's happening in the Beit HaMikdash. Really, these are all different ways of talking about the significance of the Beit HaMikdash. Why is the Beit HaMikdash significant? Well, it's important because it's a place where avodah happens, you offer korbanot. It's an important central religious location for all of Am Yisrael. And it's important because God dwells there. And each of these perspectives is drawing on different themes in the significance of directing our attention to that place, to the Beit HaMikdash, which is how we end up ruling. Yeah?
It seems to have raised this before. Let me see what you appreciate your comments.
Mm-hmm.
For those who say that Daven Mizrach,
yeah,
it's basically the intent is you're facing Beit HaMikdash. So if you're really in Eilat, you're facing north.
Correct.
You're facing west, blah, blah, blah. But for those who say you face west because of the Shekhinah, that would imply you're facing west no matter where you're located.
Correct. That would have been the sense in the Gemara in Bava Batra there. Exactly. That you'd face west. Which is funny, because we live on a globe, so anywhere on earth, west is God. That's a little bit hard to wrap our heads around.
It's an interesting...
Yeah. Thing. You have to work out what does it mean anyway when you say that God dwells in a particular place. That's already a very tricky kind of idea. Okay. All right, a very, very brief amount of time. Mincha is going to be soon. So we'll jump past the initial presentation of the halacha. We got the chance to see some of these responses and these details in a little bit. But briefly... You know, the main halachic issue that comes up is if you build a shul, obviously you build it facing Israel, how precise you need to be, some of the acronym debate, you saw some of the source 15, 16, you could look at those in a little bit more detail. Let's say the Aron's in the wrong direction. So what should you do? It's very common.
I guess you're down with the Aron.
Yeah. So there are a couple of driving principles that animate the postgame, and then there's a little bit of variety that remains. Dominating principle number one is that you're not meant to be so apparently against what the community is doing. You don't want to be in a position where I'm facing one way, you're facing another way, and it looks like you're worshiping one god, I'm worshiping another god.
That's a Cape Town example.
So he's quoting earlier sources, but yeah, that's Rav Sternbach, and that tshuva says, if the whole community is facing north, you can't just face east. Or vice versa, they're all facing east, because they heard the word Mizrach, and I thought, oh, let me build the shul facing east. And no one reminded them that in Cape Town, Israel is to the north. So that's a common mistake when you say you daven towards the Mizrach. That's not really precise. That's one principle. A second principle that is not as well documented but gets raised is we generally don't want to daven away from the Aron. Meaning if the Aron is facing west, you wouldn't want to face east away from the Aron, to the point where some posts can tell you, if you're in a shul where the Aron's to the west, better not to daven at shul. Because you can't daven to the west, you're facing away from Israel. You can't daven to the east, you're facing away from the Aron. So daven on your own, maybe stand outside so you can hear Kedusha.
Or to the other shul.
Or something. Or go to the better shul, exactly. Those are two major principles. Beyond that, there's basically one kind of major debate, and I think it's still ongoing. You see poskim on both sides, as to whether you prioritize the Aron or you prioritize Israel directly as much as you can. Meaning, you follow the tzibur, but we remember earlier I mentioned the idea of a little inclination, or you turn your face. So a lot of poskim will tell you that you try to stand with the tzibur, and you turn your face towards the right direction, whether it's Israel, whether it's, you know, exactly how precise you get to be. So that's an option. Rav Schechter from YU tries to do that. Many poskim say you prioritize facing the Aron, or Rav Willig, Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein at Gush, as I recall, felt you should face the Aron instead of directly towards Israel. So you have that factor as well. The Bir Halacha in source number 17 is not sure. Do you face the Aron? Do you face Israel? I think the Shevet Halevi says you face Israel and not the Aron. So you have poskim kind of on both sides of this debate. So broadly speaking, you have a few options. You can face the Aron. Many contemporary poskim think you face the Aron as much as possible. There are poskim who think you try to face Israel, which you could do as long as it's not so obviously divergent from what the Tzibur is doing. So you could incline your body a little bit. You could incline your head a little bit. Usually those things aren't so noticeable. You know, best case scenario, if you could get the entire tzibur to agree to face the right direction, so they actually could do that. This is something you see in the YU Beit Midrash, the one that's facing north. So oftentimes there are people who face, who incline themselves pretty dramatically, and at least enough people do it, it might even be the majority who daven in that room. If everyone's davening in that direction, as long as they're not away from the Aron, that's generally understood to be okay as a practical option. And finally, the best and most entertaining practical option is the one quoted in the Nefesh HaRav. It's quoting Rav Moshe Soloveitchik in Source 19, where he says, Rav Moshe Soloveitchik did not like to daven in that Beit Midrash. If he had to be in a place where he had to pick between facing the Aron and facing Israel, he wanted to avoid the situation. He would daven elsewhere. There were other buildings that faced directly east. So that was the best. That was what he would try to do if he had the option. So when you can, I'm not saying anyone should stop davening at Kins or any other of our prestigious institutions in our community, but you have your options, right? If you pay attention, by the way, Rabbi Reis at Kins, Rabbi Reis faces forward, Rav Willig faces forward. They all face directly where the Aron faces. Nothing wrong with that. It's one of a few options that you see among contemporary puts. Okay.
But don't face west.
But don't face west. Do not face west. Besides the fact that the Kabbalists also think west in particular is very bad, you want to avoid west if you can. But other than that, any direction, as long as you're not away from the Aron or directly west, tends to be fine. Okay. More to say in the halakhic details. If I don't have to talk after Mincha, I'm going to be here. Otherwise, have a great day.